Hey, Wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 427 of the JV Club. It's the Boys of Summer. Not really the tune. I can never ever blame any of my Boys of Summer when I actually remember to have them sing it for not knowing it, because that was abysmal. Anyway, I just want to welcome everyone into this delightful episode with Colt Cabana. What a joy. What a treasure. May I say, what a national treasure. And speaking of national treasures, I do also feel I must recommend a new podcast that I am co-hosting. I am hosting it with my dear friend Dante Bosco. It is called Braving the Elements. It is a podcast about all things Avatar, The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, and beyond. We are recapping, yes, season one of The Last Airbender, but it is a podcast chock full of interviews with the cast, creators, choreographers. I mean, we are digging in. It has been so fun. Such a blast. I've laughed so much. And of course, there's just a lot to celebrate about that show. So check that out anywhere you get podcasts, Braving the Elements. And now let's get into this episode with Colt. Why am I wasting your time when you've got Colt waiting for you on the other end of this intro? Enjoy the episode. So did you say you're in Chicago?
I'm in Chicago.
And are you from Chicago?
I'm from Chicago.
Chicago.
No, I got to take that back.
Here we go.
I got to take that back.
Let the lies begin.
I was that guy.
Just unfurl them.
I am from the suburbs of Chicago.
Okay. You know what? I respect your decision to make yourself less cool by admitting that you're from the suburbs.
It really hurts, doesn't it? Are you from, you're from the Bay? Is that right?
No, I lived in San Francisco for a million years, and I still have a comedy festival up there. But I am originally from Tucson.
There's no coolness in saying I'm from the streets of Tucson or the cul-de-sacs of
Tucson. The foothills of Tucson.
Yeah.
No, but I will say this: my dad was born in Evanston and went to high school in Willamette before the whole family moved to Phoenix, Arizona. So there's that's a couple of uncool suburbs of Chicago, right?
I mean, Evanston is the closest suburb to being in the city, Evanston and Skokie.
Okay.
So you could basically be like, I grew up right next. Like, I mean, I grew up 30 minutes outside of Chicago.
Okay.
But, we went into the city enough. But, yeah, it does hurt. Like, there's just something about a kid saying, like, yeah, I grew up at Fullerton and 46th or whatever, you know?
Right.
As opposed to me being like, yeah, I grew up next to the Ed DeBevics in Deerfield, Illinois. You
know? How many Deerfields are there? They've got to be like 11. Deerfield must be Deerfield, Mains, Fairfield, like Springfield. There's
Jesus.
A lot of.
There's now
lot of
you're really making me feel less important.
There couldn't be a more common place to come from. The Midwest of the most cliche.
I feel there was just a lot of deer running around our area in the 1840s.
Yeah.
And it was very important that they called it what it was.
It was crucial.
Yeah. I think there's a Deerfield Beach, Florida, and a Deerfield, Massachusetts, but those are the two I know of. And I always would, as a kid, obviously, or like in college, if someone was like, oh, I've heard of Deerfield, and then it wasn't my Deerfield, I would get very salty about it.
Yeah, you would be like, ours is spelled F-E-I-L-D.
I still don't know how to spell it. Is it I-E or E-I?
I think it's I-E.
Except after C,
those,
maybe?
Yeah, exactly right. Those things did not make that much of an impact on me. Or like, I know why. My dad was an English teacher, so I can look at something and understand that it's wrong, but I don't necessarily have any retention as to like why. It's just sort of it's like, I have a feeling. I got a hunch that's spelled wrong just by looking at it.
But I do enjoy. I mean, I have no pride in whether the grammar is correct or not, but I enjoy telling somebody they're wrong about it. I'll tell you that much.
Great.
Which is more a me thing than anything else, but
that's right.
I've recognized it, you know.
I feel like that's a fun part of our kind of social evolution is now we are more open as a culture about admitting our sort of like the things about us that would frustrate others. But then that we sort of stop there. Like, yeah, I mean, I'm this kind of person, but I said it.
We don't do any work about it.
That's right. That's
right. Why would
but
we?
But I'm owning it.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm a better person because I am owning it and saying that I'm owning it. But you're right. I mean, I do maybe.
It's also, that's just not that big of a deal. It's not like you're like, listen, I like murdering people, but I own it. I own it. I've taken many lives, but I'm acknowledging it. It's not that bad.
An hour ago, I felt like I was a better person. And now you've taken this power away from me.
That's my job. I'm a power vampire. Just a simple power vampire.
I feel there's a garlic joke in there. I didn't know where it placed. So you can put it in yourself.
I don't know. I'll do some light editing after this is
Thank
all
you.
Over.
Put it in post.
I'll throw
my garlic
in.
Joke.
I'm gonna work on an impression of you, so I won't even need your pickups. I'll just do my own interpretation of Cole Cabana's speaking voice. It's gonna be
pleased.
Great.
Have you done? You've done ADR before, right?
I have. Yeah.
I've done like some really fun, like. Not real actor acting jobs. And I was on Chicago PD and I had like 7 lines and they called me in for ADR and that was harder than doing.
I
had
so
never
hard.
Done that before.
Yeah.
They were like, you say awful. It like this, not like this. And I was like, what? I don't know. I just said it.
And make sure you match your lip flaps.
Yeah.
Like, lip flaps is not a term that you're going to hear a lot of places. I can think of a few where it might not mean what you think it means.
Mm-hmm.
In ADR, lip flaps it makes you hate your own mouth. It makes you hate, like going into ADR, I don't love watching myself on screen already. And then having to somehow hear how I said something and be told why it doesn't work and then be told like, you know, match that, but make it more alive somehow. Oof. Or whatever it was that wasn't working. It's tough.
I mean, I only did it once, but I did love that I was like, and I get paid more to do this?
That's very nice.
That was a good part.
Yeah, yeah. Pay me to fix this. Absolutely. That
right. If that's part of the deal, I'll screw up everything I do, I feel.
That's the lesson you took away.
100%.
I'm just going to mealy mouth my entire, I'm just like, really? But I'll articulate my lip flaps. I'm going back it for sure.
And if you are at home taking a shot every time you hear lip flaps,
lip flaps.
You are hammered.
Lip flaps, everybody, lip flaps. Please do not get in a car after this podcast. Lip flaps.
Yes.
What was your role on Chicago PD? And is that, how does that come to be? Like, do you have an agent who sort of is across the board and fills the needs of a professional wrestler and also an actor on Chicago PD?
Are you not aware of my role as Harlan Betts in season 4, episode 13?
I'm a little behind in my Chicago PD. I've only just not started episode 1 of season 1. So I'm a tiny bit behind.
I didn't watch the show, and then I got the job, and then I was like, I guess I'll watch the show to see what it is.
Sure.
And addicted now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I like
team. Procedurals, so I could definitely see myself. I have a semi-buddy who I had on the podcast named Justin Kirk, who's on Chicago Fire.
You don't remember my role as hazmat leader? Hazmat leader from Chicago Fire?
Again, a little behind in my Chicago Fire viewing. Have not begun the series.
Me and Justin did a whole podcast, a whole series about it. Not really.
Oh my God,
okay. I was on it. I had even less lines on that one.
Well, a hazmat. I mean, listen, you're in a hazmat scenario. You're not there to talk. You're there to clean up whatever horrible thing.
Oh, but
happened.
I talked, and it was the scariest thing because there was 300 people on set, and if I didn't get in the scene, and if I didn't get it right, we were doing it again, weren't we?
Yeah. So. That's a weird. That is a very specific pressure that I think somehow I sort of escaped thinking about until at some point in my career, like whatever else was going on in my private life that made me more anxious, it sort of finally crept in to stage fright. And I was like, oh, this is awful. Yes, yeah. This does feel like a lot of pressure.
I'll wrestle in front of 10,000 people in Tokyo any day of the week. Not a problem. But you put me in front of 150 extras who don't want to be there and I got 2 lines. I will flub those up.
Okay, so I clearly owe you an apology, and in fact, I owe you 2 apologies. One will not cover both. I need to apologize for the Chicago PD. Mm-hmm. I need to apologize for Chicago Fire. God knows what else I'm going to be apologizing for that I may not have caught. But so in that scenario, Was that a situation where you're like, oh yeah, I'll give this a try, and then you ended up on the set and were like, oh, this is stressful. Like, how did that come to be?
Well, it's hard to explain. I mean, I've been wrestling for 22 years now, and so like I started in 1999 as a pro wrestler, as an 18-year-old kid. And then I've been doing it ever since. And then, like, I got hired by the WWE when I was 27. And then I got fired when I was 29. And then after that, I was like, well, there goes my dream. And at 29, you think you're the oldest person in the business. So you're like, well, no one's going to hire a 30-year-old to do anything in wrestling. I'm past my prime now at this point. And so I was like, well, what are my loves? I love comedy. I've always loved alternative comedy and the comedy scene and, like, and at that point, I guess it's a little side hash, but you know, like, I was getting like into comedy podcasts big time. And so I know you're an OG, you know, like, and you know, I've seen your name on all, you know, all the back in the day. So I'm well aware of everything. And I think that's kind of cool.
And yet the respect I've received is almost zero from you. Almost none. I'm totally kidding.
Oh, I was heartbroken. I was like, this is the respect. I was like, I called you an OG.
I've already assumed now that you understand that the more we like someone, the more we give them a hard time. But it's too early. It's too early. I peaked too early in my meanness. I really apologize.
On the exterior, I'm a tough, rugged professional wrestler. On the inside, like us all, I am so weak.
Yeah. Oh,
so
boy.
Fragile.
Again, more apologies. I mean, I'm just rolling them out at this point.
You know, and again, if you're at home taking a shot every time Janet apologizes, let's not get in that car.
I'm so sorry about the lip flaps comment. Yes. Oh, no. There we go. Double shot. Oh, boy.
So I wanted to get into... I wanted to do wrestling still, but then I was like, well, I put all my eggs in this basket, so I also want to make sure I spread my wings a little. And so I started doing some comedy stuff and some improv and some acting. And then, my podcast like really took off and it put this big profile on me. And I had like I had a Rolling Stones article and I was on the cover of like the Chicago Reader, which was cool.
That's awesome.
And then people started reaching out to me about like acting, I guess, or doing extracurricular activities, which is something I wanted to do. And in a weird, weird story, do you know Paul Hauser, who was Paul Walter Hauser, who is the bomber? He plays the bomber in that movie where the guy was the security guard bomber.
The security guard bomber.
Come on, from the Olympics, and then they like shamed him.
Oh, right. The yep, that guy who was, yep, everyone thought he was a suspect, and then they like ruined his life, and I can't think
Richard?
Of his name. Yes.
Come on, we got to figure this out together. Do I have to Google this?
I mean, you might have to, or I can. I'm putting Atlanta.
Come on.
Ruined.
Paul
Richard Jewell. It
Richard
worked.
Jewell.
Atlanta bomber ruined. Brought up Richard Jewell immediately.
If you're playing the Wikipedia game, if you've ever seen someone play that before, which is fun to watch, where they go, I can start on one Wikipedia page and get to somebody else in 30 seconds.
Oh, they're calling that Wikipedia now. It used to be just like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, basically, and where you can just do that verbally, right?
But you're not going from one person to the other. You can go to like events and towns.
Because on
Wikipedia, they have the links. It's really... I mean, I can't play it, but I enjoy watching others who are professionals.
Oh, so in other words, to somebody, I mean, listen, I'm learning so much from you already. But in other words, someone's like, I'm going to set you down at this Wikipedia page, and you have to, in as few clicks as possible, get to this other thing.
Yes.
And you're just sort of strategizing based on like what your live links are and what you can click through. All right, I got it.
And you can see
this
me playing
internet
that
thing is
on
really
my Twitch
up.
Channel. Oh, okay. And so Paul was a huge wrestling fan and didn't really know me, but was like, I love the stuff you do. And so when I got fired from WWE, I really started like implementing a lot of stuff that the comedians that were doing. I thought it was so cool. So like, I remember Eddie Pepitone was doing this short called Puddin. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And I was just like, that's so genius. So like, I started doing... Me and my buddy Marty DeRosa, who's a comedian, we started doing these shorts called Creative Has Nothing For You. And it was like, okay, I can film like 12 of these in a day and then sporadically put them out. And then I made a wrestling documentary that's very popular, like on my scene, that was based off of the Comedians of Comedy. And because I was obsessed with that movie. And then obviously I started the podcast because that's what everyone was doing, talking to the, I was talking to wrestlers in wrestling in locker rooms. And Paul was a huge fan, and he's just like, and Paul was living in Chicago at the time. He's like, I'd like to set you up with my agent. Nice. Because he was like one of these guys, and I, talking to him now, he's like very spiritual, and like, that's not necessarily myself, but you know, I think he's like, God is telling me to like give opportunities to the ones I can, which is probably more than I do, right? So I wouldn't say God bless him, but bless him in some kind of way.
Yeah.
And so, yeah,
he's blessing himself. He's blessing himself by doing good deeds.
By getting me money and opportunities.
Comes back around. Yes. It comes back around. Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah, he got me an agent. And then eventually I didn't like the agent. And now I'm with this agent that I love who, she worked at the Laugh Factory and she was comedy adjacent at Stuart Talent.
She gets it.
She gets it. And yeah. She gets my schedule because I was on the road before the pandemic and the quarantine. I was on the road 200 days a year. And so, you know, like I just wanted to do those like one shots, like a commercial, like on a Wednesday or, you know, whatever I could. And there was a lot of things I had to turn down. So Dana at Stuart, she gets it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I audition for what I can and what I can get. And I've gotten a couple of things, but it's fun for me because I'm a wrestler. That's my love and passion. And I love doing random, like part of my, I don't, not part of my deal, but like I'm known to do these very fringe, weird things in wrestling. So, you know, I've done the Edinburgh Fringe for like 8 years. I wrestle for the Gathering of the Juggalos. I'll take anything and do anything. And so for me, this is just like a fun side job, but I love that the actors on, like the actor who's supposed to have my role, this was their, hopefully their big break to move to another thing. Whereas like, I don't really care, you know, for me. For me, it's
so
fun to make
$1,000. Also, that's great. Yeah. That's great. Now we've come to understand that about each other. Now we're speaking the same language. We're fine. Yeah. We're fine. So you started professionally wrestling at 18. That is so. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and assume that you weren't like working in a library until you were 17, and then suddenly decided that the world of wrestling was for you. So this is like a kid who knew in some way that like he needed to get somewhere as quickly as possible. Is that, I mean, is that accurate? Like 18,
I was working
so
in the steel mill, not the library.
Oh, this sounds like a fake Bruce Springsteen song. Let's get it going. Well, the Conker Man was working so hard in that steel mill in the suburbs of Chicago that no one brave ever lived in. Yeah, I gotcha.
And there was, for some reason, there was so much money in the suburbs of Chicago, but he worked in the steel mill.
He was a real guy. He always had a smudge of grease on his cheek. No one knew where it came from. Was he working on cars? No one knew.
The only blue-collar man in Deerfield?
That's right.
Sign him
up. That's right.
Yeah, I was obsessed with wrestling as a kid. And originally, I knew that's what I wanted to do. My mom said, you have to go to college. And I was like, but mom, I want to be a pro wrestler. And she's like, you have to go to college. So I went and played football at the best college I could. So on my wrestling resume, it would look good.
Right.
But I wasn't a good college football player ability to play on a football team. Uh-huh. So I was the worst college football player on the best college football team I could get on.
Yeah.
Which was a Division I-A team. It was Western Michigan University. And I played one season. And afterwards, I was like, I hate this so much. I hate everything about it.
Yeah.
I liked high school football. I did not like college football or not even the pressure, because there was no pressure for me. Like, I would never play. I sucked.
Right.
So I played the 1 year. And then afterwards, I was like, Mom, I'm 18. I can make my own decisions now. I want to start my wrestling career. And she was like, fine, but you have to stay in college. So I stayed in college and also trained to wrestle at the same time.
Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah. All right.
And I thought that I would train the summer in between freshman and sophomore year, and then the summer after, like, sophomore year and junior year, and then maybe start wrestling, like, you know, my senior year.
Yeah.
But what I didn't realize is that wrestling is such a carny business, probably just like comedy. It's just like, I trained for 7 weeks and they're like, you're ready to go. Right. And I was like, oh, really?
Right.
It's like, oh, you've given us your money for the improv team? Yeah, you could go on stage and do an improv show. Of course. Like, but I don't think I'm ready.
But still, like the person who is obsessed with something and loves the entertainment of it and sort of idolizes those people, and the kid who also recognizes that that is feasible and that there is a path to that, I'm always fascinated by that. I talk about it on the podcast frequently because, again, like I had a sense of loving entertainment and for sure on my, you know, little like Norman Rockwell, like put your, you know, put your book reports inside this little folder and your grades will go in there. And there's a picture of you from that year. And you flip through and you write down like this, how old I am. This is what grade I'm in. These are my teachers. This is what I want to be when I grow up. I definitely would put like, you know, actress or, you know, maybe rock star if I was real into Jim and the holograms. But like I didn't, there was no like real purpose to that behind that. Do you know what I mean?
No, what do you, no purpose to
I mean, like, I didn't really think that that would happen. I wasn't like, and these are the steps I will take to get to that place. It was just like, that would be cool. And then the older I got, the more unrealistic it seemed. So when somebody is like, yeah, I loved this thing, then I wanted to do it, and then I did it.
When I was a senior in high school, I remember they were like, write a capsule down, and at their 10-year reunion, we will reveal this to you. And I remember writing down, like, if I am not a professional wrestler at the time I read this, I will consider my life a failure. And the only reason I went to my 10-year reunion was to be like, told you motherfuckers. And at that point, at my reunion, I was in the WWE, you know, like I was on television.
Yeah.
And all I wanted to do was like, this paper has been justified.
Right.
And I was like, where's the paper? And like, no one knew what I was talking about. Wasn't a thing, apparently. I was so pissed.
That's a great movie. That is a great movie. The pro wrestler who is sort of like with the same amount of dedication to getting to be a pro wrestler is looking at that on his calendar for years ahead of time, the time capsule, and then showing up and like, no, that was a thing that we said to you. We had you fill that thing out and then it went in the trash or
they threw
whatever
it away.
Happened to it.
Where did it go?
This sucks.
Seeing Romy, Michelle, and Colt in theaters near you.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
That does suck. I mean, that feels like, of all the things, like, there's a real purpose behind doing a time capsule. It feels like that's, I mean, that's...
I waited the years, Janet.
Oh, man. I'm so sorry.
Thank you. I loved wrestling. I'm obsessed with wrestling. And when I was... I never thought I could do it, A, because I was Jewish, and B, because... I didn't look like all of the wrestlers on television and knew I never would look like all of the wrestlers on television and didn't take drugs as a kid. I've never like smoked or I've had like a couple of drinks, but it's never been for me. And I just assumed I would have to take steroids and didn't want to have to take steroids.
Yeah.
So I knew I couldn't be like this big arena wrestler. But when I was 13, I found this thing called the Pro Wrestling Torch, which is it's a newsletter, and it gives you the inside scoops of the real wrestling scene.
Oh, hello.
Which I assume would be like, there's that stuff for soap operas, maybe?
Like Soap Opera Digest or whatever, right?
I think you see it at a
grocery store checkout line.
Right, but there's Pro Wrestling Illustrated, which is the magazine that would be, I think, the Soap Opera Digest. But this was a newsletter written by a guy. You know, it was so... more specific, like a zine, if you will.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
And once I got that, I really felt like I understood wrestling a little more. And they would talk about not only the big scene, but they would talk about the little scene, which was like, hey, USWO ran a show in Memphis, Tennessee. 75 people were there. You know, the big Tracy Smothers, you know, was reported to get paid $75. And I was like,
oh, that's great. It is. It's like small town. It's like small town dish.
Yeah.
On the wrestling world. That's
but
really cool.
I was like, wait, I don't think I can wrestle in front of 10,000 people, but I bet I could do it in like on this show where there's not that much pressure and probably and then you would see the pictures of the guy and they'd all be in like overalls and you know no one looked like Hulk Hogan or whatever.
Right, right.
And so at that was the age where it really put in my head that like, oh, I'm gonna do this and I'm gonna do it on the small time circuit and I'm gonna go as hard as I can. Because there is a circuit for people like me, and it made it a reality. And so I never really thought I would be able to make it to a big time scene, which is fun because years later I did, and now I am. You know, I'm on national television every week, which is really cool.
Yeah.
But just in my head, if I could just do these shows, I would consider myself a success.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Prepare yourself for the greatest pro wrestling podcast spectacular known as Tights and Fights. A back-dropping audio showcase that helps you understand the world of pro wrestling with a lot of love and no toxic masculinity. Featuring hosts Danielle Radford.
Time to kick butt and chew gum, and I'm all out of butts.
Lindsay Cal.
I'm a brutal Brit, and my fists were made to punch and hit.
And Hal Lublin.
I was doing the voiceover this whole time.
Hear us talk about pro wrestling's greatest triumphs and failures.
And make fun of its weekly absurdities.
On the Perfect Wrestling Podcast.
Tights and Fights. Every Saturday on Maximum Fun.
Well, wonderfuls, if you're familiar with me and some of the many things I do, sometimes I have too much going on. That can cause a little bit of stress, maybe a little sleeplessness. I also have been known to complain about some achiness in the past. I'm really describing myself as an amazing human being right now. But let me tell you what has actually made me a better version of myself. I'm talking about Caliper CBD. I was an early adopter of CBD, am such a fan, and can resoundingly say I have experienced real results. And now you too can get all the benefits of CBD in just 10 minutes, whereas some CBD oils can take over an hour to just absorb. Now, Caliper CBD comes in convenient and easy to use packs. There is precisely 20 milligrams in each packet, and it does not have any THC. It is THC free, so you can feel better without the high. It doesn't have a weird taste, it doesn't have an oily residue, and I found that it mixes easily into any food or drink. I know what you're thinking, JV, stop talking about it and tell me how I can get me some. Well, you can get 20% off your first order when you use promo code JVClub at trycaliber.com/JVClub. You can try Caliber CBD risk-free for 30 days. If you don't love it, they'll give you a full refund. Come on! That's trycaliber.com/JVClub. And don't forget, promo code JVClub for 20% off your first order. I hate to chide, but you're going to be so glad I did chide. Was wrestling something that you shared with friends? Like, were your friends into it? That definitely wasn't like, we all liked pro wrestling. We all used to watch it together, but little did they know, or I was always teased because I was the one who was like, and I'm going to do this. It was just kind of for you. It wasn't something you shared
with
people.
You know, like there was friends when we were younger that was upset. Like my friend Jordan was just as obsessed with me at 6. But when we hit puberty, he turned his love to gangster rap and women, or I would say girls at 13.
Sure.
Yeah. And I always say that's like always the fun story of professional wrestling is like either like most people when they hit puberty, they start chasing after girls. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't, I just kept with it. Like, and then what, you know, like when you're of that age, it's like you like it for a different reason, I feel. And I did, I started liking it more for the inside stuff and just the different reasons why people love wrestling as opposed to like when I was a kid when you just want to see the colors or, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah, so, the tans.
Yeah. And so there wasn't someone as obsessed with me. And it always made me a little sad, but it also drives me now, and especially with my podcast and that kind of stuff, is to build this kind of community. Whenever I think of anything, I always think of like the 16-year-old cult. And so if I could do something at a show where I know, like, I just like, even if I call someone over and say hi to them, or I sneak them in to see a wrestler, and I know it's so easy for me to do.
Yeah.
There's so many things that are so easy for me to do, but I just think about if I was that age, how that would change my life forever.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you are the sort of idealized version of what younger people would hope for. And there's the idea that you're kind of keeping that, speaking of a torch in wrestling, like that you're sort of carrying that torch. I mean, that's it's so true. If you think of it in those kind of like, how easy is this for me versus what is the impact going to be on somebody else? That's such a great way to approach a lot of choices that you make professionally, you know, in terms of being connected to your fans.
And I'm sure it's the same with acting and comedy. I know it's the same. And it's cool that I'm at a point in my career where, and it's, there's so many of my cohorts, and I'm not like dunking on them. It's just, it's, I don't think they think about it. You know, they're just trying to do their job.
Yeah.
But I always think of like, yeah, I'm doing my job, but then I'm also a humanitarian, so.
You're an ambassador.
I'm an ambassador.
You're an ambassador. Yeah. And also, too, well, in comedy, I think there's a lot of self-loathing as well. So there's a lot of sort of like inferiority, like what you project is not necessarily being reflected back at home when you're like, you know, what am I going to make someone's day? Come on. Not really. Like they don't know. If they got to know me, they know I'm a schmuck. So, you know, I'm just gonna like, no, I wouldn't. I can't. I'm not gonna answer this letter or whatever.
And like, did you use that verbiage because you know I'm a Jewish wrestler?
Oh, did you not know that I'm Jewish?
Are you part of the tribe?
I really wanted to be. All my friends were Jewish growing up, and so many bar and bat mitzvahs. I really thought that would be like the secret language that would get me in. Turns out it's just one tiny part of the beautiful unsecret language.
I almost accepted you.
Thank you. I can't tell you how often I've heard I almost accepted you. It's just very, very, very common. And so when you're in high school and you have, again, you're like looking towards this goal, are there other things? Were you loving comedy back then as well? Were you a fan of stuff that, again, you sort of felt like you were a fan of, like it went in that category versus like, this is, I feel this drive towards this thing?
I mean, wrestling, I casually liked comedy. The way we all casually liked comedy.
Yeah, people are like, I watch it. Yeah, I watched SNL.
Yeah, I think I watched it more than most. You know, we were obsessed with Tommy Boy and Black Sheep and Farley and the SNL years kind of. But, you know, I think my love for alternative comedy and a lot of the arts came when I realized that I was an artist and a performer and like a DIY hustler, if you will. And so that took me not a long time, but it's kind of fun because I was, I guess, looking at it, I'm a stereotypical jock looking guy, right? I don't think it means that I didn't have the stereotypical jock mannerisms, but I'm a hulking football player. I played all the sports in high school and I didn't look down on theater or dramatics in any way. And I always say that one of my favorite classes was me and my buddy took like the theater class as opposed to one of the other classes, and we loved it. It was so fun.
Yeah.
But you know, that I don't think that was necessarily my scene, and in my youth I recognized myself as, I guess, the kid that played sports, and then once I started wrestling because I love wrestling because I was athletic, but I learned that I was performing and I learned how to manipulate a crowd and I learned that the crowd was part of it. And I learned that I have to get big and I have to show out and show off. And then like, it just dawns on you that like, oh, I am a performer.
Yeah.
And then you learn to love and and then you want to seek out the other performers and love and understand and relate to them. And so, and I knew what, again, it was hard to relate to Steve Martin or Bill Murray or whatever, but it was easy to relate to Dimitri Martin, you know, or Howard Kramer, you know, like, or whatever it is. So
we love our Howard Kramer.
You know?
I haven't seen that guy in a million years.
Colt Cabana and Dragon Boy Suede were on the same page in 2004.
Yes.
And,
yes, indeed. I love that. I love that. That really puts that puts it in a beautiful orb of light, as far as I'm concerned.
So well, in high school, it was. I mean, maybe I liked sports, but everything was wrestling. I mean, I loved hanging out with I had like this group of friends that were very close. So it's kind of like whatever we all liked. I mean, yeah, we liked. I don't know. We liked urban fashion. We liked, we liked comedy movies. We liked going to the movies. We liked just hanging out, being idiots. But like everything I thought about was wrestling.
Yeah.
Everything.
God, it's so interesting. I mean, maybe it's not interesting. You probably had this conversation before because you are in the comedy realm as well. But everything about wrestling to me, I would come at from the performative angle. Like even as a young person, my cousin who's trans, was before he transitioned, was sort of started getting into competitive bodybuilding and absolutely did like mess up his body, taking all kinds of stuff. And I think all of that he would say is a part of like identity and kind of not like wanting to have a relationship with his body that felt right. And part of that ended up being like that he abused it because he wanted to have a man's body. And, you know, it was before he was really willing to recognize that or able to recognize that in front of other people. But so I had like a sense of, you know, he was like into wrestling and I had a sense of all of that. But as a kid who always performed instead of a kid who was always in sports, although I did play some sports, I always thought of wrestling as like, oh, I see this as a performance first and foremost. I mean, of course it's a sport, but whatever lens, you know, you have on as a young person that helps you understand something in a way that relates to you. I would have thought like when you said that you sort of, you know, that there was a process of coming into the performative part of it that was maybe a little bit later for you. It's like, that's all I would have to go right. into it. And I would have to make my body work to match the what I was seeing that was performance. So I don't know. That's just interesting. You know what
and
I mean?
It's fun to see people in the wrestling landscape who the same way that you would be who have done it. And then they'll realize like, oh, I'm an athlete.
That's amazing.
Of
sure.
course.
Yeah. That's
because
really
we're all coming at it from different. There are people who got into wrestling because they love the pageantry and just the performance and didn't. There's so many people. I think that's why I got a little far in the beginning because I came from an athletic background. Mm. And I remember when I started training, I had went from two-a-days in collegiate sports to wrestling training. And I was like, the wrestling training is going to be harder. And then I realized like, it's kind of just all schmucks off the street, you know, uh-huh. to use your verbiage.
My people. Yes.
That's right. You know, so like I was so advanced because I was a Division I athlete. I just assumed it would all be Division I athletes.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of people coming into wrestling who were not athletes and just liked wrestling.
Yeah. So that, so you're in your mind, the going and being at a college and playing the best football, you know, being on the best team you could, given all those circumstances, when you got in and you started training, were you like, oh, I didn't even need to
do it. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And not that I was let down because I think it put me ahead of in the class, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Also there was like, you know, there's wrestling moves and like you know, in my head, I knew how to do them because I've watched wrestling so much. And some people, like, they didn't even know how to do the move. It's just like, how do you not know how to do it? I was just so far ahead because of my my athletic prowess and my obsession with wrestling. And, you know, everyone wasn't like me. And it was very surprising getting into wrestling like that.
Yeah. And how about ladies? I mean, I know you said your friends maybe sort of said that they matured into as if you can't give yourself credit for also being mature and loving wrestling, but not abandoning it for girls. How did that play out for you in high school?
So it's very funny because like my group of friends, like I said, and I don't know if you, how deep you get into like popularity and that kind of stuff. Right. It's hard.
I mean,
to
as
put
deep, as deep as whatever feels significant, you know?
Yeah. It's hard to put a lens on it because we're all, you know, my buddy played in the NFL. One of my other friends, there was seven of us. Another one went to play college football. Another one went into the military. You know, like your typical just 18, 17 year old dudes, I guess.
Yeah.
And we would go to parties and we would do that kind of stuff, but none of us really drank or did drugs.
Uh-huh.
And none of us got laid.
I mean, I guess that feels atypical to me.
Is that right?
Well, I mean, first of all, when you say you have a friend who went into the NFL, that does not seem typical to me as far as like just your typical average like athletic guys in football in high school. That already seems like, I don't know, that feels like a little above and beyond, right?
Yes.
And especially now taking into consideration like where you ended up and the fact that, yeah, I guess there are tons of athletes who have that who just aren't that interested in drinking and drugs and stuff like that in high school.
I mean, so we were interested in women. We were so weird. Like we were the weird kids, but we had these like bodies and auras of like popular kids. So
yeah.
So our weirdness, like our auras of like half jocks or whatever, tall, you know, tall guys and we worked out. So it's like we got to go to the parties, I guess, and we got to like kind of just live in our own world, and we were never worried about being made fun of. And
right.
I think to our credit, and I think that's something, you know, I've heard people have said this about me be like, oh, you went to high school with Colt. What was he like? And they would be like, well, he was this, but he always stuck up for the, you know, like I would never, I had no interest in punching down or anything. So we were in that sense, but we were just so, we're all still like best friends to this day. We all live all over the place. It's such a fun story. And I was talking to my friend the other day and I was like, they were like, did you like high school? And I was like, yeah, I loved it. It was just me and my friends just being idiots. And then yesterday, actually, we all did a barbecue and I brought that up to my friends and I brought that up to them and they were like, Colt, if you really looked into it, everyone hated high school.
Right.
Or not everyone. He's like, there's such a large percentage of people who hated high school.
Right.
And I guess I didn't really realize that because we had such a fun time. I was like, we had no responsibilities and it was just us seven hanging out as much as possible.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that does seem special to me. That does seem special to me because I feel like I've also talked to a lot of guys who at that age, you know, maybe they didn't have girlfriends, but they had a lot of girl friends. And so that was kind of where the intimacy or friendship existed for them.
We had none of that.
Or they were, you know. But I think a bunch of guys, and you all are straight. A bunch of guys who kind of found that relationship in high school when a lot of other guys, and I think some of them being straight and being athletic, felt like they couldn't have that closeness with some dudes. Do you know what I mean? Like bros were like, yeah, we hang out and we drink and whatever, and like we go to parties and stuff. But like, I only tell my mom and my girlfriend the truth, like of my heart. You know what I mean? So having that relationship and then having it maintain, I think is amazing. And I was gonna say for you, I would imagine that part of like building that backstory, having that foundation with those guys, versus like you said, if you're traveling, you know, hundreds of days per year, that the consistency of those relationships and that backstory feels like that would be a big anchor. But not everyone ended up with your schedule and you guys are all still super tight. So it's not even a reflection of like, well, to psychoanalyze, like you didn't have a lot of consistency after that. So you're clinging to your friend. Like, no, you all went different ways and yet you're still super tight. I think that's wonderful.
It is. I mean, but then going back to the question about ladies, like I didn't lose my virginity until late. Yeah. I didn't really. It was years and years until I had a committed relationship, and so we didn't have girlfriends or like even like. I don't think any of us in our group like made out with a girl until senior year or something like that.
Yeah, that's not usual. I think
it is usual.
I think it's unusual.
Yes, I do too.
Yeah. Did you want to? I mean, were you like?
Yes, we were all the horniest kids ever. Yes, of course. And I think at one point we were all like, should we all just go get like prostitutes? You know, like American Pie had just come out. You know,
I was about to say, I really am wondering if you're like, oh, American Pie really spoke to me.
And we didn't really. That's something we really didn't talk about that much because I think we're all just super embarrassed about it.
Right.
So it's kind of just like unsaid and unknown. But I do remember a conversation of being like, we should get prostitutes or this should be a thing that we do because this is kind of
it shouldn't
it's kind
be
of
looming
sad.
Anymore. Yeah. What do you mind if I ask like what you consider to be late? I mean, when you say until you didn't lose your virginity until late.
I'm like, my early 20s.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's, I mean, listen.
35.
I would say that is late. I would say that is perhaps empirically late.
Yeah.
God, this is great. I mean, it's so gross. I hate being in the entertainment business, especially if you write or pitch or whatever. I remember a period of time in which I was new enough to it that every time someone said that'd be a great script, I was like, see, this is why I didn't want to move to LA. It's so like nothing can just be what it is. Everything has to be for sale. Like I remember that. But once you have been in it and you've had the opportunity to like be in someone's thing that came from real life and that they love and that's precious to them and it got made or, you know, even something that you do. And then it never sees the light of day, but it felt great to do. And you understand like, oh, stories do come from somewhere. Storytelling, things that get made do often come from, they have to come from somewhere. And like this, your whole story feels like I want to see that movie. I want to see that guy. I want to see the guy who ends up, you know, I can. It's all laid out so lovely. Like, it's just, you know, it's great.
It's fun because I think a lot of people in the wrestling world love my story where, like, hustled very hard to get to WWE by the corporate wrestling and then fired and then really made his name for himself afterwards.
Yeah. Why were you fired?
Just because they were just I didn't look the part and
yeah, whatever.
Yeah. I had six matches. It was a very, like, I was like a beloved wrestling underground figure.
Yeah.
And then I got signed because basically everybody, and this can relate to, I think, in comedy or like an SNL, if you will, or like everyone on the team who was in the WWE was like, Colt's the best. He's so entertaining. He should be here. And finally, after like 20 of the wrestlers said it to the management, they're like, fine, we'll hire him. Yeah. And then, you know, they put me on the show and I didn't look like everyone and I didn't wrestle like everyone because I have a very weird comedic wrestling style. And they're like, this is, and they just were over it. And so, and then I, you know, I built it all up again. And that's the story I think everyone knows and love. But I just love, from an outsider's perspective, it's the kid.
It is.
For you, it's everything. I know that's what the podcast is based on.
It's everything leading up to it. No, but I mean, that's all of that is, that's just great. And of course, the professional, like, once you're already known on some level and you still have, you know, it's still an underdog story and all of that is great. But listen, if you make that movie, I think there's going to be a prequel. I think there's going to need to be a prequel that takes us to young Colt. Somebody's going to have to be auditioning to be, you know, 17-year-old virginal Colt.
And it, well, now, man, when I was 18 or 20, I would, Jason Biggs, everyone said I looked like, and then John Favreau, I would get a lot of John Favreau.
Okay,
they can play me.
Yeah, which, by the way, like, they don't really look like each other, so that's a classic sort of, like, they kind of, like, I feel like that happens a lot where you have people are like, they tell me this and then they tell me this and you're like, huh, I don't. And yet I don't feel those two look like each other. It's like whatever element is playing in from one.
It was a different incarnation of me, you know.
Yes.
In my thicker years, I was a little more Favreau. In my in my bleached tip blonde hair years, it was Jason Biggs.
Lucky.
Yeah, but I'm gonna go with Favreau because I want him to direct and produce.
He could absolutely be the one, like, pushing this project forward. 100%.
So, Paul Hauser, if you're listening to this one, and you could do the same thing you did for me to get me into that Chicago PD episode.
That's right.
I would highly appreciate it.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Schmanners. Noun. Definition. Rules of etiquette designed not to judge others, but rather to guide ourselves through everyday social situations.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband, host Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife, host Teresa McElroy.
Every week on Schmanners, we take a look at a topic that has to do with society or manners. We talk about the history of it. We take a look at how it applies to everyday life. And we take some of your questions. And sometimes we do a biography about a really cool person that had an impact on how we view etiquette. So join us every Friday and listen to Schmanners on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
Manners, schmanners. Get it?
All right, I want to get into this MASH game with you. I'm so happy that you know what it is and what we're about to do.
And I played it as a kid. Of course I played it as a kid. A lot of people not play it as a kid?
A lot of people don't play it as a kid. No. A lot of straight boys don't play it as a kid. This is what I'm
saying. Yeah, I guess I probably played it with girls. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it, like fifth grade, fourth grade.
Yeah. Listen, ladies are planners. Ladies be planning. And this is very plan oriented. It's very official.
But I liked MASH. As a kid, I liked playing it.
Yeah.
It was something I enjoyed, which I think says something about me too.
Yeah, you have an imagination. You're forward thinking. And yet you're flexible because you know you're not going to end up with every single thing you want that's on the list.
I will say this. I had lunch with my mom and her best friend and her daughter, who is my age, and we were neighbors, and they were telling us stories about when I was 5 or 6. And the mom said about me that she always liked me and knew I was different because I would play with the Barbies with my friend Beth, and I'm sure I thought they were wrestlers, but she said that all the boys wouldn't dare play with the Barbies, but I had no problem like playing Barbies with her.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, just put that in the script. What the fuck are we doing? Put it in the script. Why are we even still talking about this? I'm so angry.
I'm not. I mean, I am in the biz. If you've ever seen an Old Navy commercial from 2012, you would know who I am. Or a Potbelly's direct to the internet advertisement, you would know I am in the biz. But
I know you're in the biz. I'm saying we got to get you deeper in with your.
I'm
own
saying
biopic.
I'm not as deep as you are. So that's this is your job, not mine.
Until you have had a $20 bill surrounding your face for a Wells Fargo print ad, you are not truly in the biz. You can drop a lot of names like Old Navy or Potbelly's as much as you want, but I'm talking about big banks. I'm talking about too big to fail.
That's my apology to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, because I see a lot of lip flaps over here paying some sort of lip service, but I didn't hear the heartfelt apology until just now.
And now we're okay again.
Thank you. All right. For the first category, let's please do three. I mean, listen, we got to do it, right? Let's do three wrestlers that you would love from any era that you would love to collaborate with on something in some way, whether you're fighting them, whether you're out on tour with them, whether you're making a movie with them. Three.
Okay. I want to make it so everybody knows. One will be Andy Kaufman.
Great.
Does that count?
Absolutely. Absolutely a wrestler.
Great. The other one would be the Revolting Blob from Billy Madison.
Great.
Who was a wrestler.
Yes.
And trying to think of my other obscure professional wrestlers who have found. I mean, The Rock is too easy, obviously.
Yeah. Although I'll say a lot of the guys who come into comedy from wrestling, they are like so freaking lovable and so funny and so self-effacing. I mean, I don't know, like, I've met him once at a Comic-Con that we were both doing, but, like, Bautista, like, he came on the scene and it was like, you're special, you're very special, and you're really good. Like, he's a really, really great actor. It's great. But also seems very, like, I don't know, here I am, I.
Yeah, I've met him a couple times, and yeah, from everything, he's very nice. But I'm not picking him. Come on, get out of here.
Don't pick him. Don't pick him.
Have you ever seen Ed Wood?
I've seen Ed Wood.
I'll take George the Animal Steel.
Oh, man. This is so meta. This is great.
Who played the bad guy, I think, in Ed Wood, but also a very famous 80s wrestler who I loved as a child.
Great. Let's kind of stay with movies since you moved us into that realm without me even seeing it coming. Let's do three movies you can jump into and just be in whenever you want. You're not reliving the plot. You're not a character in it. You're just in that. Gives you the opportunity to be in that world.
Great. Recently, I was on a Max Fun show called Go Fact Yourself.
Yes, very fun show.
Have you been on?
Have I done Go Fact Yourself? I think so. Yeah, I've done it.
Yeah, they asked me what I was an expert in, and I said the movie Over the Top.
Oh yeah. Oh God, Over the Top. Yeah, I did. I remember now that I said I was an expert in Jodie Foster.
There you go. Did Jodie come on the show?
No. But she did, but they did find the actor who played Napoleon in a Disney movie that she was in when she was a child that was called Napoleon and Samantha.
I thought you were going to say Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and I was so excited
it was
Napoleon from that movie.
Nope. Just some kid named Napoleon. Oh, maybe Napoleon was the lion, actually. You know what? Guess who just outed herself as not an expert in Jodie Foster movies,
right?
After all. I think, by the way... I didn't understand how it was all going to work, and nor did I ever think that guy would be the guy who was there. And I was like, it was like Jodie Foster and like this other kid. I remember this guy was in a bunch of Disney movies. I could not tell you his name. And they were like, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the person Janet couldn't bother to remember.
Guess who remembered Stallone's kid's real name?
Oh, good.
This guy.
And that's who turned up?
Yep, and he was ecstatic that I knew his
lucky
name.
Lucky bastard. That is fantastic.
I do remember, speaking of high school, we had to watch Contact in science class.
You had to.
And I remember falling asleep so quickly to that movie.
Meanwhile, I've seen it so many times. It's like, they're out there and they want to help. Oh, God.
I was just like, I just want to hang out with my friends at study hall.
There's a resort in Tucson, and I use the term resort lightly, that had a channel for some reason, unbeknownst to, like, I don't know why this is the case, but Contact was always on, and it was a inside the hotel channel. It was very strange. Okay, so is Over the Top one of the movies that you're going to jump to? Great.
Yes. Man, this is very typical of, but I'm going all the same genre, if that's okay.
Yeah, this is for you. This is your mash.
Great. Bloodsport with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Great.
And then The Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
And so if it does tell you why I loved wrestling, because I always say that, like, I love sport, but I also love, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and He-Man. And then, like, I love the idea of a tournament / character action movie.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask you about, I was thinking about He-Man in my mind, because when you were talking about Barbies, I was thinking about all my She-Ra dolls and how important they were to me and how meaningful, and that they were much preferred to Barbies. Okay, next category, let's do three foods that you can have in perpetuity, snap of your fingers. There's no harm to the world. There's no harm to your body. It's all you. It could be a very wide category. It could be a very specific thing you had that you're like, oh, I wish I could always have that thing.
I like that you preferenced that, because I don't want to name drop, but I went on the Doughboys podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I can't, you know, I was talking about how I can't eat all these foods because, like, I'm an athlete and I have body issues, you know, from a young age.
Sure.
And I got so much shit of, like, stop talking about healthy stuff. We're here, you know, like, I felt like, I don't know. So I'm glad that, okay, knowing that nothing will happen to my body.
Nothing will happen to your body.
Great. Okay, I'm going to go a 1991 Little Caesars pan pizza.
Fantastic.
Okay. We're not talking this era.
This is how you do it. This is how you do pizza. This game. So you're winning. You're winning at life right now.
Thank you very much. The world's largest malted milk balls, specifically from the bulk food section. Scoop or pull the lever and they come down. Your choice.
Okay. Great, your great, choice. Great.
And, you know, I'm going to say grilled cheese and a tomato soup combo. Can I do
fantastic.
That?
Fantastic. Fantastic. Can I do that? What am I going to do? What am I going to shut you down? No, it's great. Tomato soup, great. Great. Let's now move into, I feel like I had a very long conversation with someone recently about the idea of Little Caesar and why Caesar, it was one of those things that you just don't think about when you're a kid. Like, who's the Noid? Why is the Noid a thing? Like, the Noid is just a guy who keeps your pizza from staying hot. Like, it's unclear. So then I went down this road of, it was like a bad Quentin Tarantino scene of, like, you know, I really got to psychoanalyze, like, what was going on? Why did we need a Little Caesar who, like, stabbed pizza on his spear and said pizza, pizza twice? Like, what? Where did that come from?
But you know the answer, right?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's just, Roman, but I mean, like, it's,
no, it's
pizza,
just
but
it's marketing.
Yeah, so
it's got to be something.
I was trying to make it into like a deep fake backstory.
Nope.
Or like a
nope.
Deep, like, some guy just came in after too much cocaine in the 80s and was like, yes. Guys, I got a great idea. His name's Little Caesar and he's two pizzas. And now I got to go take a shower. You're right.
And,
you're absolutely
and
right.
Give me all the money. Give
you're
me
right.
all the money.
And then they did. Okay. Next one, romance. Three people from, you know, I don't care if it's comic books, movies, actresses, actors, historical figures, animals, the sky's the limit. Romance, alternate universe.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. This is
and
hard.
I don't want to make it, like, that's not a pressure situation. Like, please be as outrageous as you possibly can.
I'm thinking
if you don't
this.
Say flubber, please. Please don't feel you need to say anything around or related to anything flubber-like.
Michael Jordan.
Great.
He's, I mean, how could I not?
He's
Michael Jordan with the Last Dance bloodshot eyes, Michael Jordan.
Great.
That's very important.
Great.
Yeah, because I feel if he looked me in his eyes in 1993, I would feel too much, like, I'd be overpowered.
Understood.
But now he's a little
to
down to earth.
Yeah,
yes,
he needs to be humbled a little bit.
Yeah. French silk pie.
Great. I get it, man. I get
could make, I could make love to a French silk pie.
Get it.
Any day. Which wasn't one of my foods, by the way.
No, it wasn't. That's because it's deeper than that.
Yeah. I'm not, I don't even want to eat this pie. Also, weird callback to American Pie. I didn't even see it happening. But and Miss McMillan, my first grade teacher.
Great. Great.
Who had a weird, like, afro-y type hair, but then would, like, put those comb
like
things
in
her
it?
In yeah. her side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an odd, like, it's what is, like, it doesn't necessarily look amazing and also doesn't feel like it's doing a thing that is like, oh, thank goodness I have my hair out of my face. Like, if it's already that, sort of living out here.
Was that for peripherals?
Oh, maybe.
Is that why?
Listen, she's teaching first grade. Those little fuckers can get out and around you so fast. You got to have, it's like you need to have eyes on them at all times and you don't need anything in
but
their way.
But it did look cool in like a Grace Kelly, not Grace
well,
Kelly.
Oh, no, like a Grace, yeah, like a Grace, now I'm going to say Grace Slick. No, Grace Jones.
Grace Jones, right? Was she the tall African
black woman who,
yes.
yeah, who had the amazing
yes.
face yes. and was just like, oh, are you mm-hmm. a god or goddess? Like, mm-hmm. talk about non-binary power. I mean, amazing.
She looked the coolest.
She looked the coolest.
If I could
no,
put
it's
a fourth.
True. It's mohawk-y. You're right. That's
if I could
cool.
put a fourth, I would put her on, but I just can't. Miss McMillan has
Miss
won.
Miss McMillan.
And, yeah.
Bless. God, love her. God, love her. Somewhere right now, Paul is like, I got to get her own show too. Miss McMillan, she sounds fantastic. That's what God wants. Okay, next category. Let's do three skills that you would love to wake up with tomorrow and have sort of downloaded Matrix style. So they could be sort of complex or they could be as simple as like, you know, just cooking a better, almost said cooking a better salad. I have problems.
Cooking
I don't know
a
how things
salad.
Work. I don't know how things work.
Up close magic.
Great choice.
Which I am good at, by the way. And I don't
That's
want,
why
like,
you picked it, because you know it well enough to know how hard it is and how much practice it takes. And so
and
this
I,
is a perfect shortcut scenario where you would, yeah, it's great.
And short gut scenario.
I know.
Also.
Some of us have shorter guts than others. It affects our digestion.
If only I could pull out my small intestines in front of somebody and be like, no, I have short guts.
Excuse me while I whip this out. Listen, I have to cook my salads. That's how bad my digestion is. Now I've justified that.
Knowing sign language.
It's great.
I just feel it's a superpower. Knowing any other language. Can I put any language? Can I know,
yeah.
put knowing all the languages?
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
I
could.
Omnilingual, I'll say. Omnilingual.
I go down many YouTube holes like we all do. One is First Amendment audits. I can't get enough of them. But another is this other guy on YouTube who just knows how to, he studies and knows all the languages and then just films himself going to all different parts and like recognizes somebody who speaks some kind of language and then speaking to them and they're all blown away and then I'm blown away and I'm like, why can't I be like this guy?
Yeah, that's amazing. And it is his life. It's his full-time job because that's a tremendous amount of work.
No, but I think his brain is way.
It's just how it works.
It's yeah.
That is great.
The same way I can pick up a hip toss and a body slam, like I understand that lingo.
Same.
He knows he can do Swahili and Italian in a day.
Pizza. Am I right, everybody? that's my Italian. Okay, what's your third one?
I picked up on that one and left.
Thank
and
you.
Appreciate it. Yes. What's my third one?
I mean, I included sign language in all languages.
I amended
that category, right? Okay.
So just skills, huh? Oh, I'd like to know I'd like to be a boot maker.
Oh, great.
I do. You can see in the background of my video, I sew my own wrestling gear.
That's so great.
And there's my bobs and threads over there.
Yeah.
But
your bobs and threads. It's great.
And that's also my tag team name, too.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And the name of my improv group. I'd like to know how to, I always find a special skill that these people, because wrestling boots is a very small niche job, but somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I only knew.
Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of like qualifications a good wrestling boot needs to have that you can't like scrimp on.
Fit your foot, go around your foot,
mm-hmm.
be able to tie up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So far, I know. I could never do it. So far, look, I know. It sounds impossible.
Cool. Yes.
Great. Okay, next category, let's do three places in the world you would love to have a second home. Doesn't need to be a vacation home. It could be like, you know, busy hustle bustle of another city, but three places, vacation. And we're assuming we can teleport you there.
I want to have somewhere tropical and nice.
Great.
So wherever the Skittles rainbow starts.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Done. Next one.
A Canadian VFW hall that I have converted.
Great.
Into like, you know, it's modernized. It's got all of the cool things.
Yeah.
That, you know, the hipsters have, you know, all of it.
Uh-huh.
But it's a Canadian VFW hall.
And it could be anywhere in Canada?
We could do it in Saskatchewan. Let's go to Saskatchewan.
Okay.
I have
Thank
been
you
to
for
all...
picking the longest word for me
You're
to
welcome.
Fit into the tiniest little Saskatchewan.
Not BC. Not British Columbia, BC.
Yeah.
Saskatchewan, please.
Saskatchewan. Yes, mm-hmm. Thank you. BC. Super easy. Got it. Yep.
No.
Yep.
That's too typical.
Wouldn't possibly.
And Hawaii.
Okay. Let's do three.
No, nope, I take that back.
Uh-oh.
Come on, I'll take that back.
Yeah, take it back.
Yeah, wherever Echo the Dolphin lives in that Genesis game.
Great.
I want to live where he lives.
Okay, this is one of the messiest. I'm going to be like, when I say, what do you think I meant by Omnisimilis Gengage? You're going to say Omni language, and you'll get me back on track. Thank God.
It sounded like Minnesota Gangnam Style. So
that's what you're gonna end up getting if that's what you tell me I wrote down.
Sounds like a fun time.
It's gonna be a blank. It's gonna be a blank in my mind. Okay, next category. There's just two left. In your current home, we sort of have a secret room with a. It's not actually taking up any real space in your house. It's this sort of magical place where you can go in and it's a room in your house that could be a forest, but it could also just be like a home gym, or it could be a recording studio. Three magical yet practical rooms. They don't have to be practical, but it doesn't matter how big they are, is my point.
Okay, I want a room full of trampolines, much like a trampoline jumping place.
Okay.
That people go to now, and I could just go there, but it's like my dream to go there, and I definitely have the money to go there, but I've just never been.
Uh-huh. Okay. So it's like a bounce.
A jump house.
A jump house.
Yes.
I wanted to call it a bounce house for obvious reasons.
But that is inflated plastic, where I'm looking more at a mesh trampoline
situation. The actual
situation
trampoline
going
situation.
On here.
I totally get it.
Yeah, so let's make one like that.
Great.
Do you remember the original, it was like Jenny's Cam or something? She was like the original voyeur girl. I just want a voyeur room.
Okay.
For me, and I'm selling subscriptions and have a Patreon and have an OnlyFans, but I'm not doing anything sexual.
Got it. Voyeur room, non-sexual.
I mean, you might be able to see a ween here and there when I'm getting, you know, but it's not meant. And if that's why
it's
you want to sign up.
An incidental ween.
If you want to sign up for that, I guess.
Yeah.
But please, you know, don't know what it is.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, and then the third room would be much like Revenge of the Nerds. Have you seen Do You Remember?
I don't think so. What's Do You Remember?
The movie.
But like, what is it?
So one of the main jock guys took one of the main cheerleaders into it was called like the moon room or the alien room.
Oh, yeah.
Essentially, it was a giant waterbed.
Okay. All right.
The whole room was a waterbed.
Okay. Yeah.
So I would like to have a waterbed room.
Okay.
Which I did have a waterbed as a child. Never, I would say in 3.5 years, never changed the water.
Yeah.
And did that affect me in any way? I'm going to say no. That's fine.
My cousin also had a waterbed. Only person I knew who had one, and like a Kiss poster on the ceiling. And I wanted so bad, like sometimes he would let me sleep with him, and I wanted so bad to love it. And it was just, during the day, I loved it to be on and play on and feel like I was like somewhere magical. And then when it came time to fall asleep on it, I was like, I can't do this.
I loved everything about it.
God, good for you.
Yeah, Water I had a good room. One.
Good for you. Okay. Gotta have a good one. Got to have a good one. Okay. Speaking of gotta have a good one. What about three things that we've given you the power to improve upon I'm not speaking of what, like, the pressure of, like, suddenly there's world peace or you've cured cancer. Something smaller. Smaller things that we're giving you the power to improve upon for everyone. Like, guess what? Now everyone's turn signal just works. Like, your car intuitively knows when you want to turn. You're not ever going to see someone cut someone off in traffic because they will always have their signal on. Do you know what I mean? Like, just little things.
Okay. As a man who's been ripped off so much of my heating and air conditioning and everything in my home. Everyone, we don't need appraisers anymore.
Right.
Like, we all know why something is wrong and if it's wrong.
Yes, indeed.
I think in anything. Can that be a blanket statement? But
yes.
Okay.
Well, I'm gonna say the kind of mechanics of things, like kind of limited to mechanics versus like, I know that what's wrong is that you were mistreated as a child and that's why you're being mean to me today.
Right.
That's kind of a different type of
mechanically speaking.
Mechanically speaking, you know what's wrong and why it's wrong. Great.
Great. Okay. Okay. Right. You know how like you put in 25 cents for Skittles and you get like four of them or M&Ms?
No, I want to believe that you have a deep grudge against some sort of Skittles experience after picking.
Yes, I have.
I would have Skittles rained on me and those motherfuckers.
That's why I quickly was like, I mean, M&Ms, not Skittles. Those are free now. Those are free.
Great. Free. Yeah. I guess like a vending machine handfuls. Free vending machine handfuls.
Yep.
Great.
And now, in this world, we don't have to bend over for anything.
No bending over.
Ever. I mean, yes, that's it, but can we do it to our toes are just as skilled as our hands?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because that leaves room for even wackier shit that would be fantastic, like more climbing and more just the general foot dexterity would be amazing.
And in that, people don't wear shoes or socks anymore, but it's okay. We all have to wear wrist support or ankle supporters, though.
Ah, fantastic. Okay. Do you want to do old school where I sort of do like a shape and squiggle and you tell me when to stop? And then we'll all use that to kind of figure out what you get. Sometimes I ask for a word and then I just use the word in a secret and mysterious way.
What would you like to do, Janet?
I think I want you to tell me one word to describe the kind of dream you hope to have tonight.
Exotic.
Great. Okay, will you tell every... Now listen, you've dropped a lot of things already on this program of places people can find you. You've done a very good job of making it very clear that everyone wants you on their podcast. I get it. I'm like 11th in line. I get it.
No.
But will you tell...
I thought you were going to say the USA Network at 2 p.m. where Chicago PD is normally.
I've got to brush up on when Chicago PD airs. I just have to. Will you tell people where they can find you and what they should be paying attention to and following and all that stuff?
Yes. Hi, everybody. If you don't, okay, so most importantly, I have a new podcast. I did The Art of Wrestling for like 10 years, and I slowed that down because I talked to every single wrestler ever, which I'm sure Janet can relate to.
Oh, and, so many. Well, lousy with them.
So I started a new podcast called Wrestling Anonymous, and essentially, I call myself the curator. So people are calling in. I have a Google Voice number, and they call in and they leave any kind of wrestling, any kind of story, but it has to do something with wrestling. There's some kind of outline with wrestling, and I edit them and I kind of, you know, make sure that they're digestible and understandable. And I don't let the people that want to leave 9-minute voice messages leave 9 minutes. I have to chop it down to 2 minutes if I can.
Oh, that alone is a lot of work. Let me just say
a lot right of work. Yeah. And I thought this podcast would be the one where I didn't have to do that much work.
Oh no!
But now I'm finding out
it's so
much work. And as a perfectionist and a control freak, I won't let anybody help me. So I'm doing all of it myself. It's called Wrestling Anonymous, and I hope you listen to it or give it a shot. It's very fun. Like half-hour episodes. Very fun.
Fantastic.
I am Twitter and Instagram, Colt Cabana. I'm on Twitch. That's a real joke, but I understand the idea of making fun of Twitch, but I do also enjoy it.
Yes.
Twitch.tv.
Fair.
And I mean, I can go forever. I see you're done, but I have to plug AEW, which is on television every Wednesday night.
Plug that shit.
And we're
AEW,
starting to,
come on, watch it. Don't be
Yeah,
fooled.
We had Shaq and Snoop Dogg wrestle on our show during the pandemic. And Mike Tyson. So
that's a good group. But of all of those, I have to say Snoop delights me and surprises me the most often.
He did a splash off the top rope that was so atrocious. It was amazing.
What else would you expect?
Not, that's exactly, but I
know what
he
came
would,
to do.
Yeah, I hope he would have like landed perfectly, but it wasn't.
So
we're touring live. Check out a town near you. And I'm also touring independently as a wrestler and comedy sometimes. So ColtCabana.com has all of that information. Oh, and I did a comedy. I did a documentary. I told you about the Comedians of Comedy one. That was Wrestling Road Diaries 1. But the third one I did, Wrestling Road Diaries 3, is called Fun Equals Money. And it's about the dissection of comedy wrestling, which I do. And we do like a little short little tour. And then we also kind of talk about how and why comedy wrestling works.
Oh,
and
that's
so
great.
That would be like one, if you're not into wrestling, but you like comedy, you could watch that.
Listen, first of all, I have a lot of work to do. I'm going to have to cancel some stuff today. Okay. I am feeling very good about these results. I first want to congratulate you. Oh man, I don't even know where to start. This all feels like it's of a piece. I'm very glad about that. Number one, I want you to rest assured that not only is anybody going to try to tell you that they need money from you to fix a thing in your air conditioning or heater or anything else in your home that doesn't need fixing, or that they just, maybe it does, but they just know they can gouge you. That's never going to happen. So if something goes wrong with that, if something goes wrong in your water bedroom, you're going to know what it is. You're going to change out that water. I feel very sure that you'll probably feel better changing out that water. It's an entire room of waterbed. You're going to want to cycle that out. Water some plants. You know how to do that. So here I've combined some things. So yeah, you got your water bedroom and you know how everything works. And you've given that gift to other people too. So we all know. We know. We're on to you, gougers. Know how to fix it. Know what's wrong. I also want to congratulate you on your ability to make boots. Specifically, I guess. Well, you didn't say wrestling boots. You mentioned wrestling boots, but you said you want to be a bootmaker. Mm-hmm. So name the boot. I would say maybe don't wear the pointy ones you make if you're going into your water bedroom. I would say also congratulations for your collaboration with the great Andy Kaufman. That is something I would very much like to see. So we are going to make it happen here. Again, I did say you had a mansion, so the water bedroom makes sense there. But you also have a water bedroom right where you are.
Andy would love a water bedroom, I feel.
Oh, please. Are you kidding me? He'd never come out.
We're going to do so many bits in that water bedroom.
You're going to do so many bits. And also, we all know that's going to be physically taxing because that's a lot to keep balance on, a water bedroom. You're going to be able to refuel on circa 91 Caesar's Pizza pizzas. Deep pan pizza.
Oh no,
I think,
are they Big Caesars now? Because they seem to have gotten rid of the little part.
Oh, I thought I said Little Caesars pizza.
You just said Caesars.
I said Caesars pizza. I'm trying to make them bigger. I gotta let it go. Let them be small. Let him be Little Caesar. He doesn't need more of an ego complex that he already has.
Because in 91 they were selling, you buy one, you got one free.
Yeah.
But you're like, stop doing two pizzas. Just make that two pizzas, one size, right?
No, I don't like that. I regret everything I said. And by everything, I mean that I didn't say little when I said Caesar's pizza. Circa 1991, Little Caesar's pizza. I want to congratulate you as well on your ability to jump into the film over the top whenever you so desire. Get in there, get in that world, maybe do a little arm wrestling. I don't know. I want to finally, there it is. There it is.
That's me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm in the movie
That's
poster.
That's really you.
You can't. I know this is an audio thing, but this was a birthday gift I got.
I want to say, rest assured, it does appear to be the original poster, yet there is Cole Cabana wrestling, arm wrestling, sweatily in a gorgeous way with none other than Sly Stallone. I don't know. I'm a little worried that your romantic partner in this alternate universe, Bloodshot Eyes Michael Jordan, is going to be a little bit, maybe a little jealous. maybe a little intimidated by this whole over-the-top situation that you're going to be able to jump into whenever you want. I hope that you two can work that out together. I think probably some of the best healing that's going to happen in that relationship is in your second home in the very much appreciated Skittles Rainforest.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So you didn't get the everything comes out and is a free handful, but you yourself, I mean, you can go to the Skittles Rainforest whenever you want.
Me, myself, and Bloodshot Eyes, Michael Jordan.
And Bloodshot Eyes and Taste the Rainbow together.
Mm-hmm.
Right out of the air.
Mm.
Just open up. There they
and
are.
You can only assume that Michael also got us a deal with Skittles.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I mean, this is going to be an ongoing partnership.
Oh,
not with just Jordan, but with Skittles and beyond. Mm. I can't guarantee that some other things might not pop up. I don't know if the Lucky Charms guy's going to show up. There may be also a pot of Lucky Charms at the end of this rainbow. I don't know how many rainbows there are at any given time, where they end or where they begin.
Well, they begin in the Skittles Rainforest.
That's right. All rainbows begin. So there you go. Oh, well, then you won't. You'll never see him because he's going to be at the end of the rainbow.
At the end. Yep.
I'm an idiot. What was I thinking? This has been so much fun. I cannot believe I have to get off in 4 minutes and get on a very boring conference call that will be the opposite of this. Thank you so much for doing the podcast. My only final offer, if you're interested, is to sing a snippet of Don Henley's Boys of Summer. If it's something that you can conjure off the top of your head, I know the listeners would appreciate it. I would certainly appreciate it, but no pressure.
I only can start from the point that I'm going to start from. And,
perfect.
That was the... Boys of Summer.
Yes.
That's all.
Parts
I can think
of that.
Tell me how it starts.
Reminiscent of the song Boys of Summer. All the components were there. They were a little shuffled around, but all the components were there. They were all there. It was like the pepperoni was on the bottom of the pizza, but it was still a Little Caesar's pizza from 1991. So don't you worry.
I just had this conversation of how I know no words to any songs and just the hooks. And somehow it just... I just did a podcast with my friend in the UK telling... And that conversation came up.
Yeah.
And now...
That's called hubris, my friend. That's called hubris.
Or stalking. You were in on that podcast conversation and just knew.
Wasn't I very, very over the top? I was very over the top about not knowing any Scots. Like, to a degree that was a little uncomfortable. I was like, I don't know any Scottish people. Me? No. Now you know why. I was covering because I was talking.
That was the Boys of Summer.
Please listen to the song after this so you know how very close you were. Thank you again, my new friend. I will talk to everybody else on the podcast next time. Everyone, be safe. I want you to feel free to get vaccinated if you haven't been. That's all. I'm just going to throw that out there. We're all in this together. It's fine. It's everyone's choice.
I did
it. I'm thinking about you.
Why wouldn't you do it?
I did it.
Not by you. I mean everyone.
And yeah, exactly. Everyone. And that means you too, Jon Favreau.
Yeah, Favs.
I know. He listens to the podcast from inside.
And all you Boys of Summer, go get that vaccination.
This one's for you! The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.